Welcome to the Aspen Chapel podcast with me, Nicholas Feasey. So over the last few weeks, we've been doing this series on the nature of friendship. And I've sort of defined friendship as the deepest level of support and encouragement to an end that's mutually enriching. So friendship is the deepest level of support and encouragement to an end that is mutually enriching. And in this series, we've looked at whether or not we have true friendship with various elements in our life. Do we have true friendship with the planet? Do we have true friendship with each other? Do we have true friendship with our bodies, with the earth, with our senses? Do we have true friendship with death? And so on. So it's that sort of level of friendship I'm looking at. It's an enormous topic. And in the first week we did it, I asked the question, are we friends? And we looked at the difference between friendship and people moving beyond a transactional friendship that many of us have. You know, I'll scratch my back if you scratch yours. If you know, that sort of thing. I got that wrong, but you know what I mean. I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine. And it's moving beyond that into a sort of soul friendship. John O'Donohue refers to it as an anamkara, a soul friendship, where we really look at giving with no expectation of return. It's about friendship in love. Then we looked at the idea of, you know, making friends with our souls. The very fact that you can't really have that deep soul friendship unless you've made friendship with your very soul, with the ground of all being. We tend to hold that at arm's length. We pray to God up there. We think about it, God as being out there. But what we've got to do is we've got to create a friendship with our souls, with God, with the deepest part of who we are. And once we've created friendship with that deepest part of who we are, then we can go out and make friends with those around us. We then looked at making friendship with the circumstances that come to our lives. You know, all the time things are coming at us in our lives, you know, with health, children, cooking, shopping. How do we actually make friends with that dynamic stuff that's going on? And we looked at the way that you do that is by making friends with your mind, because it's up to your mind to respond to all of these things. And if your mind is continually pushing them away, then you'll always be in that turmoil. But if you make friends with your mind and your mind can then rest in those circumstances, then you can make peace. Then we looked at friendship with impermanence, with things changing all the time, and that this required us to become the still point in the turning world, to find that still point within us where we could watch all those changes going on. And then last week we looked at friendship with diversity, coming from that peace within us to recognize the value of all diversity, and the differences in all people, and asking those two key questions, which for those who are different from us: what can I learn from your life to enable me to live my life more skillfully? That's the first question. What can I learn from your life to enable me to live my life more skillfully? And then the second question that we ask is, how can I help? That's the two questions in diversity. And today I want to look at friendship from with the earth. And I'm going to start with a warning from the Kogi people. Now, the Kogi people are indigenous people living somewhat isolatedly in the Sierra Nevada of Colombia. And they have become increasingly aware of the world around them. And so they decided to issue a warning to the world around them. They labelled it, "From the Heart of the World, the Elder Brothers Warning." They see themselves as the elders and we as those who need learning. And they say, the great mother created the world in water. She makes the future in it. This is how she speaks to us. We look after nature. We are the mamas and do this here. And we mamas see that you are killing it by what you do. We can no longer repair the world. You must. You are uprooting the earth, and we are divining to discover how to teach you to stop. I think it's just so amazing from Indigenous people saying, you know, we want to teach you how to stop. And I found that book, I found that quote in a book called Heart Open, Body Awake by Susan Apashayan. And Susan was Christian Dillo's teacher. Christian, who was here earlier this year, he came in March and as part of our speaker program. And Susan is coming to us next May to talk about this whole area of heart open, body awake. And she says in her book, though the Kogi are not purely hunters and gatherers, they are still living embedded in nature, as we all did for such a long period of time. Only in these last few thousand years, we have created a serious rupture between ourselves and nature. The Kogi are calling on us, the younger brothers, to wake up to the havoc we're reaping on our Mother Earth. When we lose contact with the unitive state, we don't notice that we're doing harm. We don't notice the rupture, but we identify with the results. We feel forsaken by God. She goes on to say, many of us feel like isolated little people within a big universe, or worse, we're obsessed with our own self-importance, ignoring everything else. We become trapped in our egos without a direct link to others. At this point, compassion becomes a mental exercise at best, or forgotten at worst. Compassion becomes at best a mental exercise, or at worst forgotten. That's what Susan said. And you know, I think that we know the truth of this. We know that we're not in a friendship relationship with the earth. We know that we are in an abusive relationship with the earth. We exploit her so we can get what we want without any thought of her well-being. We're not in a relationship of the deepest level of support and encouragement to the end that is mutually enriching. And you know, we know that in the end, she will bite us back. In the end, we're a part of the Earth's biosphere. And we are like a guest who comes to our house and trashes it. On this Earth, we pay no heed to what we do. And in the end, we will adjust to such an extent, we will have to either adapt or die. And I think, you know, that is what climate change is about. The Earth is adapting to our misbehavior. And in the end, you know, when a guest trashes our house, we do decide that we're going to finally eject them. We either start behaving on the earth or we will be ejected by the climate, by not being able to survive, and then the earth will readjust itself. We're so entitled. We think we own the place, so we can do what we want. But we don't own the place. We're just stewards and we're failing at our task. None of us own anything, actually. We come into the world naked and we get out of the world naked. We think we own our country and that we're entitled to make whatever laws that we want to make. But we don't. We stole it from the Native Americans. The land we think of as the Roaring Fork, as aspen and basalt, is really Jutland. We stole it from them. We like to think we own it. This chapel was built by Mennonites, and yet we all act as if we own it. In both cases, we act like it's up to us to do whatever we want to do here, whereas in fact, we're just stewards of this chapel and the land that we're on and the towns that we live in and the country we exist in and even on this earth. We're stewards, and yet we act like we own it all. We tear it up for gas and oil. We turn the land into food factories to feed, mostly rich, and then we drop high explosives or worse on those parts of it that we think are out of line and need to be tamed. But I know you know all this. I mean, I have to say it, but you do know all this, and it all seems an impossible problem. And till I think you go right back to the origin of the problem. In that Lord's Prayer that Heather used, Jesus gave us words that can set our minds straight about what our attitude should be to all of this. I think there's an answer in that. And the key line, I think, that can shape our thinking is, may your kingdom come, may your will be done, as in heaven, so on earth. What that actually means in reality is, you know, O great one, the ground of all our being, the consciousness that is fundamental, that is expressed through Ward, the consciousness expressed through Andy, through me. May your divine purposes for good come about. That's what it's really saying. May your kingdom come. May your divine purposes come about. And let those divine purposes be manifest, that are manifest in heaven, may they also be manifest on earth. As in heaven, so on earth. Heaven is wherever God is. That's the definition of heaven. So the heavenly realms perfectly conform to the divine order. And so may the earthly realms, that's what's being said, also conform to that divine order. And so in this meaning, earth is all phenomena. It's literally the ground, as in that which we're all standing on, like the ground of all being. We talk about the ground of all being, which is God. This really, what we're talking about, earth is the ground of all phenomena. This earth, my hands, my brain, my thoughts, all the cells in my body are the earth. All the cells of that pillar and the earth beneath it, the core of the earth, in the heavens and all that's in between. Everything, all phenomena is earth. It's what the Buddhists call rupa. Earth is all that which is not yet heaven, not yet transformed into a new heaven and a new earth, as is described in the book of Revelation. Now, this is at weddings. This is one of the most popular verses, would you believe, that is used from Revelation. It says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband." So there's this concept that the work that we do is transforming all phenomena. Thoughts, brains, cells, trees, flowers, everything is being transformed into the heavenly realm. That is the work that we do. Our work here is about transforming that earth into that heaven, and we do that through the action of love. It's done through the action of love. But the key to this is that it gives us understanding as to the fundamental place that we have to put our attention if we're looking at deep friendship with the earth. it allows us to see where to look. Because you look out there and think, where do I start? What do I do? It's just such a huge problem. It's not just about the soil under our feet or even the way that we treat the planet. It is about the very essence of what we identify as matter within this world. And that includes our bodies and our minds. John O'Donohue, in his book Anamkara, sees our bodies as being the physical extension of our souls. Our bodies are the physical extension of our souls, the manifestation of our souls, and therefore sacred. And to the same extent, all matter is sacred. All earth is sacred, if we could but see and understand it. He says, we need to remain in rhythm with our inner clay voice and longing. We need to remain in rhythm with our inner clay voice and longing. Yet this voice is no longer audible in the modern world. We're not even aware of our loss. He's almost saying what the Susan was saying about losing the ability to hear what's going on. Consequently, the pain of our spiritual exile is more intense and is largely becoming unintelligible. We're not hearing the still small voice that's within us. All we hear is the roaring of our minds and the minds around us and the continual insistence on me and mine. Get this, get that, make me safe, look after me. Do whatever is necessary, but make sure that I stay on top. Let's say no to them. We're not even aware that we've lost that still small voice. And most of us are therefore unaware that we're living in a spiritual exile. It's this that leads to the disconnection with the environment around us. We treat the world as we treat our bodies. We treat the world as we treat our bodies. We treat our bodies almost as something to be indulged in, something to give us comfort and pleasure and security, something to enable us to avoid pain. Our bodies are there to give our minds the pleasure and security that it craves. And if that pleasure and security is not readily available, then we take what we must from that which is around us to ensure that we don't go without. And just as our minds have forgotten to really listen to our bodies, to listen to that inner clay voice that is speaking to us, that we're disconnected, so we've forgotten to listen to the way of the planet and the way that the planet is talking to us. The way we treat our bodies is the same way that we treat our planet. The way we've forgotten to listen to this, our bodies, to truly listen to what our bodies want rather than just have our bodies serve what our minds want, is the same way that we've forgotten to listen to the planet. And it's this that leads to humanity abusing the world so that it can get what it wants. But Jesus says, may your will be done, as in heaven, so on earth. May the heavenly laws come into my mind and into my heart. May I think and live as if I am living in heaven, and then I will treat everything around me in the same heavenly way. That's what's being said, and that means love. May my mind be willing to give with no expectation of return. May my heart give in the same way too, and my body, and my hands, and my feet. May I look in a loving way. May I hear in a loving way. May my taste be loving. May my touch be loving. May I express the love that is in the heavens, and by doing that, become a loving expression of the heavens on earth. That is the movement that we're being asked to make. It is this transformation, mind by mind, each mind by each mind, each body by each body, person by person, that is needed to solve the world's problems. And those two questions, what can I learn from you to live my life more skillfully, and how can I help, flow naturally from living in a loving way. That's what it is to be a true friend of the earth, to all that is earth, to all, and I'm going to use this word, particularization. A friend to all particularization. Anything that is particular, to the particular of all that is. We have to take the particularity and transform it by, with, and into a unitive nature. We have to transform the particular into the unitive. That is the journey to a new heaven and a new earth. It is through the unitive nature that is at the heart of all creation that we have to take everything that's particular and separate and bringing it into a unitive understanding. Do you get a sense of what I'm saying? We have to take the particular, the separateness of everything and everyone, and bring it into a unitive understanding. This is to recognize the essential non-duality of all existence. And it starts with each one of us. We have to be saying in our hearts, as in heaven, so on earth. And for those of you panicking, I am on the last page now, so you can relax into your unitive nature and know that it's... So that's, I think, where it begins and ends. Thich Nhat Hanh sums it up well and shows the relationship between heaven and earth. This little quote from him. He wrote this down. This morning, I picked a tender green leaf off the ground. Is this leaf in my mind or outside it? What a question. It's a very simple question, but very difficult to answer. The notion of outside and inside cannot be applied to reality. We tend to think of the mind as in here and the world as out there. The mind as subjective and the world and the body as objective. The Buddha taught that mind and object of mind do not exist separately. They inter are. Without this, the others cannot be. There is no perceiver without the perceived. That's what Thich Nhat Hanh said. So he's really saying that object and subject manifest together. That is the relationship we have with the earth. And our consciousness of this is what brings about a new heaven and a new earth. Thanks for listening. If you feel moved to make a donation to the chapel, please go to aspenchapel.org. Thank you. And if you'd like to receive these podcasts regularly, subscribe to the Aspen Chapel through Apple, Google Play, YouTube, or any other outlet.